The quality's good, isn't it?
Yeah, it is good. It's amazing. I'd watch us.
Hello, and welcome to this very special episode of The Tottenham Way, the first of the Crisis Tapes episode. All it took was a global crisis to get us out of retirement, Dan. Dan Kilpatrick, how are you, sir?
Tom Hayward, I'm very well, thanks. Given the circumstances, I think my self-isolation could be worse. I'm aware of that. So, just kind of cracking on, really.
It's a very, very strange world that we live in currently, isn't it? And it feels like football is probably bottom of the list for most people, although I don't know about you, but I get to kind of Sunday afternoon and I think what I wouldn't do to see Burnley versus Newcastle as a terrible Super Sunday 2 o'clock game, you know?
It's kind of surreal, and football is not a priority in any way, shape or form. But at the same time, I think the reason why there's such a pressing conversation about football returning is I think a lot of people do recognise that it would cheer up the country right now and it would be a distraction, and it would be a good thing if football was on, albeit only when safe and appropriate. So I can see why there's a kind of clamour to get it back and to know when it's going to be back. But yeah, in the grand scheme of things, it's just really unimportant.
We have decided to do a couple of specials in response to the situation, I think probably to keep us sane as much as anything else. Thought it might be quite good fun. What we're going to do in this episode is kind of do a catch-up of since we last spoke, which I guess is coming up to 2 years now since the last regular podcasts. But
we've got to review the last 2 years.
No, of course not. We're going to do a bit of a where we are now kind of thing, but we're hoping to record a few more specials, a few more guests. It's all obviously going to be done, given the circumstances, over Skype. And I think, Dan, we were talking just before we started recording that the audio quality arguably could be better than what we experienced in the first season and a half when we recorded in the pub in Drury Lane.
Definitely.
Where was this technology 5 years ago? The other thing is that the Skype calling ringtone is an absolute banger, isn't it?
Oh, what, the boop, boop, boop.
It's great, isn't it? I am too. That's two massive plus points for me for the way that we're recording this. So yeah, we'll look to do a few more specials over the next few weeks. And I mean, horrible to think of it, but maybe months as well. But yeah, thought we'd do a general catch up on maybe Spurs's and a whole of football's approach to this crisis. I mean, it's completely unprecedented in what they're calling peacetime, or what we know as peacetime. You know, complete shutdown, global shutdown of football. It's bizarre. And I think that I could never have imagined that a season would be derailed quite like how it has for any reason, let alone something like this. What do you make of Spurs' response so far? Because today's Tuesday the 31st, so you might be listening to this a couple of days after. Levy released a statement today, didn't he, on behalf of himself and Spurs. And I must admit, I found it a bit difficult to kind of catch the thread of it. Where's this come from, in your opinion, or what's the kind of message behind it?
Well, the statement today was essentially just a financial update where Levy announced that all 550 non-playing staff at the club have taken a 20% wage cut. So some of them will be furloughed under the government scheme, which essentially means they just won't be working, and the club can claim 80% of their wages up to £2,500 a month back from the government while they're on this leave of absence. So that it's the club said it's just for April and May, but obviously we've got to be open-minded, and that presumably could continue if there's no football in June and July, etc. So some staff, I imagine, like tour guides, people working in the club shop, are going to be furloughed because their jobs no longer exist. Other staff are going to continue working. For instance, the press office is still largely operating as normal, albeit from home, but they will take 20% pay cuts for the next 2 months at least. So that was essentially the meat of the statement, but it was incredibly emotive statement from Levy, for what was, as I said, essentially just a financial update. He really delivered a stark warning about the potential consequences of this crisis on football. He said clubs big and small could struggle to exist after the shutdown's over. He said people need to, I think, realise the gravity of the situation, essentially. Let me dig out exactly what he said, because it was quite strong stuff. He said people need to wake up to the enormity of what's happening around us. He also referenced what's happened at Barcelona, Bayern Munich and Juve, as well as Borussia Dortmund, where obviously players have taken big pay cuts, and he called for players and coaches to take pay cuts. And I think for me anyway, that was probably the crux, the key to the statement, is that Levy was really delivering a message to the players in many respects, reminding them that we're all in this together, reminding them of the gravity of the situation, and really just saying, you know, wake up and face reality, really. You know, this is an unprecedented time, and obviously the Premier League players have not yet agreed to a pay deferral or a pay cut. That's something that has to be worked out for contractual reasons with the PFA. It's not like in Spain where clubs can cut players' wages. It's a different system over here. Players aren't technically club employees. They're kind of contracted workers. So it's the devil's in the detail. But really, I think Levy was saying, look, it's time for us all. It's time for us all to make sacrifices. And that includes, you know, players and coaches across the Premier League.
Yeah, Levy referenced fans as well, didn't he? Saying, you know, fans are potentially losing their jobs and I can't remember the exact wording was something like, we'll be anxious around this time about their futures, something worse to that effect. And it felt weirdly like it was a kind of change of tact from Levy before. And this might be maybe caricaturing him in the way that a lot of people do, in kind of, you know, the fans come third, if you like, on his list. But he definitely tried to sort of inject an angle there of, you know, there are people worse off than what we can consider ourselves, which I thought was an interesting angle to take, considering, like I say, how he's kind of perceived. A businessman at the end of the day, isn't he?
He is, yeah. And I think, honestly, this statement was the most emotive and humane thing I've ever heard from Levy, I think. You know, he talks about families losing loved ones, millions of jobs being lost, businesses being destroyed. He talks about not taking for granted the kind of small pleasures in life, like getting off the train at Seven Sisters, walking up the high road, having a beer and a pie and watching Spurs play at home. So, you know, it was an incredibly kind of humane statement for, you know, as what I said, was essentially a financial update.
I have to say, the beer and the pie thing did sound a little bit like the how are you doing, fellow kids meme that sort of gets bandied around whenever an old celebrity tries to get on board with something. It was a little bit like all in this together, but yeah, it that bit made me laugh a little bit.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, I think putting aside the fact that there's a question over whether Levy could personally do more, given what also was announced today about his salary for last year, putting that aside, I think it was a very, very good statement. And I think he hit the right notes. And I think it's probably the starkest warning from a leading stakeholder in the game so far about the consequences of, or potential consequences of, this crisis. I don't think anyone as high profile as Levy has essentially come out and said, you know, even big clubs could struggle to exist. And if we go back to March, he also released a statement in line with the financial highlights, which were essentially the top lines of the results that released in full today. He also released a statement alongside them and said, you know, we need to make sure this crisis doesn't undermine the future stability of Tottenham. And he reiterated that today, you know, saying that even though Spurs are the eighth wealthiest club in the world, according to Deloitte, you know, the virus does not... you know, take that into account. It has no boundaries, I think he said. So it's pretty clear, reading between the lines here, that, that Levy is genuinely worried about the financial security and prosperity of Spurs going forward. And if he's worried, we've got to imagine that, you know, clubs across, you know, lesser clubs across the Premier League and clubs throughout the country, lower down the pyramid, are going to be really, really worried too.
Yeah, absolutely. Extraordinary times, I guess. And it's going to be a case of wait and see what extraordinary measures need to come out of it, I suppose. Thinking of football as a whole, and maybe the league as it is, what's your gut feeling of what's going to happen with regards to the remaining games of the season? Because at the moment, we've got a number of different, I wouldn't call them options, because they all seem, I suppose they are options, but they all seem to have a downside that affects somebody quite badly. If that's Liverpool not technically winning a title, that's one way. And then the other way, which is, you know, let's say let's end the season now or something, you're looking at three clubs at the bottom who would all have perfectly valid reasons to say, well, actually, we had a real chance of staying up here. And the amount of money you lose out of going out of the Premier League and stuff like that is kind of, is a huge factor. When you've just mentioned there about the future of football clubs, you know, this virus is going to, and the situation is going to have an impact regardless of what the decision is. So can the Premier League, or I don't know who's really in charge of this, but can the governing bodies who make this decision really kind of separate themselves from the situation and the emotion of what those decisions would actually entail to the impact that it will have from a business point of view? I suppose there's two questions there. What do you see happening? Because I just cannot think of anything that there's no possible outcome that's going to please enough people. It's going to piss someone off, whoever it is.
It's going to be the least bad outcome that they come to, without doubt. I mean, I'm not desperate to kind of speculate about what happens and how we resolve the season, because there's been a hell of a lot of that. And honestly, I have no idea what's going to happen. There are so many different, you know, scenarios and implications. My overall view, though, is that kind of the whole point of football is that, or a football season at least, is that it's not over till it's over. You know, that's the beauty of the game. You know, anything can happen. You play it till the end. It's not a season unless you complete it. It's not a season unless everyone, you know, plays everyone, and you see it through to the end. So I really don't like the idea of kind of points per games formulas for deciding things. I know that's one suggestion, certainly like lower down the leagues, in the National League, for instance, they're thinking about that. So I don't really like that idea. I think it's not over till it's over. I don't like the idea of avoiding the season, but honestly, I mean, kind of increasingly find it an appealing option. I just think there is a case, and I'm choosing my words quite carefully here, because everything's so incendiary, but there is a kind of case for, you know, drawing a line under this, and I think everyone would benefit from a fresh start. And in a way, there's something quite comforting about, you know, the order and of the familiar, and just starting again in August, having a kind of clean slate, as it were. But then, you know, there are just so many implications that arise from that. And, you know, why are you prioritising a season that hasn't happened yet over one that's still ongoing, particularly when, let's face it, it could be affected by exactly the same problems if this virus comes back, as people say it might well do in winter or even, you know, next spring or whatever. You know, why would we prioritise this season when we could find ourselves in the same situation again? So essentially, I don't have a good answer for this.
I agree with you, though. I think you're right in terms of a season is a season. And also, for me, it begs the question of when is an acceptable cutoff point to say we have to finish this. You know, if we were two games from the end, sure, I understand that. As it is, we're 12, something like that. Is that right? It sounds,
that sounds about right. Yeah.
You know, what would be an acceptable cutoff point in these extraordinary circumstances? What would be the one that we'd say, no, actually, there's no point even trying to finish this one? You know, halfway feels like a sensible one, but then you've got the added thing of Spurs played more away games against the top six in their first 19 games, as an example. Everyone's going to have a reason to gripe, aren't they? Mm. And I think that it's a shame when you think, I look at teams like Sheffield United, who are having an absolute stormer. Every reason to think that they could make certainly European football, maybe even Champions League, if they got a real lucky run at the end. And you do think that that is unfortunate, and they would have reason to appeal for, like, well, hold on, this is a really big thing that we're missing out on here. But I think to honour their situation means you have to honour everyone's situation. And in the case of, I'll bring it back to the first point, in the case of Liverpool, fine, they're almost, it's as certain as the sun coming up tomorrow that they were going to win the title. But for
sure,
Bournemouth,
but they haven't mathematically done that.
I do agree.
Obviously, the problem. If you say, okay, Liverpool were probably going to win it, then there's a very strong case for Chelsea to say, well, we were probably going to get top four. And
no, absolutely, that's what I'm
Whoever's 17th right now, yeah.
It's not just a case of we would have won X, Y, Z, but again, Sheffield United, even if they didn't make Europe, their league table bonus at the end of the season, kind of unfortunately I don't mean to sound demeaning to this, but a club like Sheffield United, that a few million difference is massive. And it may not make a difference to us to finish between fifth or sixth, for example. But for Sheffield United, who are probably looking at finishing anything around the relegation zones, but to finish fifth or sixth is a huge difference and could have serious ramifications for the future. So to kind of... I agree with you, there is no answer, is there?
It's just an absolute legal minefield. I mean, my colleague James Ollie's got a piece going in the Evening Standard tomorrow on Wednesday, where he's spoken to some sports lawyers about the possibility of playing games behind closed doors. And even that possibility, which I think seems one of the simplest solutions to everyone, is just fraught with legal complications. I mean, if the government was still recommending social distancing, there's absolutely no way you could advocate literally playing a contact sport, for one thing. Mm. If Premier League players signed waivers, but then let's say Harry Kane signs a waiver to say he's happy to play, and ignore the government advice, what happens if then he catches coronavirus and gives it to someone in his entourage, and who then gives it to someone vulnerable? The potential implications for not waiting until essentially the danger has passed and it's safe to do so just seems so massive. Football, I think it would be really, really tough, even though they're obviously trying to find a way. And this idea of playing in kind of secluded camps is definitely one that's actually been raised. They're definitely trying to find a way to make it work. Mainly, I think, for financial reasons, to satisfy the broadcasters. But also, I think that there is an element of wanting to give people a distraction. So they're trying, but personally, again, while I'd like to see the season finished, I also don't see a way that football comes back until the country is kind of relatively back to normal. And as we've heard, that could be kind of 6 months. So again, what point do you say enough's enough? Which is, I think, the point that Harry Kane made on his Instagram Live on Sunday, saying, should there be a cutoff point? Kind of inclined to agree with him on this one.
Yeah, I just think you can't have it both ways. You can't put kind of, it sounds a bit grand, but humanity first, and that should be the top of everyone's list at the moment, of literally keeping as many people alive as possible on the planet right now. And also couple that with, we want to finish a Premier League season that, all right, for much of a muchness, the same teams competing year on year. I get that as a moment in time, Liverpool would look at it as a relative kind of disaster for them as a football club. But again, football itself can't have it both ways. We can't be saying, be safe, be well, keep stay socially distant, all of that stuff, all that messaging goes out the window if they suddenly say, well, we're happy to do, what was it, 12 games, a game every 2 days or something like that. It just, there's logistics just don't seem to work as well. And the middle of the country as well, like, is condensing that into one place better or worse? Like, whose advice are they following there? Is that just a stab in the dark, or it just feels like too much to try and put to sign off, if you like, before they can even start to look at what might work.
And I do wonder if, in, you know, 6 months, a year, 18 months time, whatever it is, we sort of look back on this and the devastation that the situation would have wreaked on not just the UK economy, but the global economy, the world. You know, everything's going to change, isn't it? And I wonder if we'll just find it bizarre how obsessed we were about the return of the Premier League season and, you know, whether it would happen, when it would happen. It might just look utterly, utterly inconsequential, given, you know, what this virus will unleash and already has unleashed, to be honest.
Absolutely.
But then, you know, again, having said that, the Premier League is a massive contributor to the UK economy. So, and, you know, you get the league playing again, you get, you know, bookmakers, rightly or wrongly, you know, operating again, you get broadcasts operating again, you get sponsors, you get supporters. So it gets things moving, but
But you've got to have the people, haven't you? You've got to have that footfall. You've got to have all of that lined up to be able... Because otherwise, it's funny to think of, you know, they're desperate to, as you mentioned, sort of fulfil broadcast obligations, contractual obligations of all sorts, sponsorship, etc. And you just think... I don't know if they're just being a bit tone-deaf to what that actually might look like in real terms. I mean, Liverpool winning their first title for 30 years... potentially at St Andrews because it's in the centre of the country against, I don't know, you know, Everton or whoever it might be, with zero fans around, probably no real celebrations, all with this backdrop of a huge global crisis that is literally killing people. You know, for me, it doesn't add up in my head that you could possibly do this with any sort of, oh, thank God we managed to do that because now Liverpool get to win or hold the title that they were surely going to win. Or, you know, we can all sit back and relax because BT Sport got their 300 televised games this season. I totally take on board the idea of it being an important economic factor and stuff. It just feels a bit small-time, doesn't it, against the bigger picture, I guess. I mean, speaking of, I've got a question here. It kind of sounds a bit... don't know if I should be really asking it, but Spurs have had an absolute stinker of a season, and I think we're not on track to achieve any of the targets that we set out at the start of this season. And admittedly, the goalposts couldn't have been moved any further from where they were at the start of that. But is this a kind of, let's say, regardless of what decision gets taken, the next season starts, is this a kind of a bit of a stay of execution? Would it, unfortunate though the circumstances of course are, but it feels as if since the start of the season that Spurs players, coaches, chairman, fans, everyone could have done with a sort of 6 to 12 month break completely from football after the Champions League final. It feels like a bit of an act of God on their behalf, if you like.
I mean, and don't, you know, forget, Mourinho kept wishing the season would end as well. And then it did. I mean, it does feel crass to talk about it, really, but I mean, there's kind of no doubt that it was timed rather well for Tottenham given the nosedive they were on, and it was easy to kind of imagine those final 12 games being, or whatever it might be, I haven't checked that, but it's easy to imagine it being really quite bleak after the Leipzig match.
About 3 years ago now, doesn't it, that Leipzig game?
Speaking to someone last week, I think, and they were like, that was 2 weeks ago. Like, no way, that must have been at least like 2 months ago. If football does return in whatever it may be, in mid-May, which was certainly a plan mooted a couple of weeks ago, whether that's still realistic, I'm not sure, but if it does return, obviously Kane and Son and possibly Bergwijn and Sissoko will all be fit. Spurs will be in a much better position than they were before it all shut down. And you know, potentially, you know, Mourinho's had a bit of time to get his messages across to the players, albeit they're not in training. So yeah, I mean, it's not a bad thing for them, but it's just really hard to think that way at the moment.
I mean, on the flip side of that as well, if I agree, it is crass to think about it and talk about it. It just feels like if we're gonna kind of hang on to any sort of sense of business as usual, don't you? I guess, even if there is no live football to be talking about. But on the flip side of the perceived positives, you mentioned Kane, Son, Bergwijn. I think Ndombele can be put into that category too, of, you know, getting himself fit. This reported injury that he's got with his groin, he obviously needs time. He doesn't need games and he doesn't need training to be aggravating it. So maybe the best thing that happens to him in Spurs' career. But you know, Jan might have played his last game for Spurs. Lo Celso was just getting into his stride as well. He'd really sort of broken out as well in the last couple of months. Tanganga's development potentially really curtailed by this. I think it was his 21st birthday today as well, actually.
It was.
If you're listening. But yeah, you know, there's also ramifications there. Lloris gets a year closer to his mid-30s. Toby gets a year. It's all very minor things in the grand scheme of things, but there is definitely a flip side to this idea of sort of the headline act of Kane and Son getting back to business. It's a shame,
but every club's in the same position.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
And there's going to be, you know, I was speaking to someone last week who, you know, who was genuinely concerned that, you know, a lot of players just might not be the same after this. You know, if they're shut in, I mean, players are very reliant on routine. You know, a lot of them really struggle with long-term injuries, and we're now kind of essentially telling them all to stay at home for the foreseeable future, like the rest of us. But, you know, I think, yeah, I do kind of, I take your point, but I think kind of Lo Celso being in his stride could be the sort of least of concerns when football resumes. You know, it's going to take, you know, if it's kind of 3 or 4 months, as has been suggested, you know, we could be looking at, you know, a really strange picture when it comes back.
Yeah, and it already is. It's difficult to imagine what. The only thing you can equate it to is when football stopped for the World Wars, particularly World War II. It just feels that there's this kind of post-war records that people talk about for goal scorers and things. And this feels, while it may not last quite as long, you do kind of feel like there's a pre and a post for this kind of global event, and football is part of that. It's just very difficult, finding it very, very difficult to kind of reconcile all of it in my head anyway, but let alone just spending a Saturday going to football and watching us play Southampton at home just feels like a kind of the most aspirational thing that could have ever happened. And look, I think I spoke on the Christmas quiz that we did about, you know, I think my love, maybe not probably for football overall, but certainly for Spurs, had definitely waned recently. Number of factors behind that, and it's just, it doesn't feel quite the same experience anymore. And I wonder how I might come out of the end of this, and to my relationship with Spurs and with football generally might have kind of reignited a little bit when you see what a uniting force it can be. So I think ultimately, when this is all over, you think of the summer, the World Cup summer, if you like, 2018 World Cup with England, when the sun seemed to shine every single day and there was just everyone was just getting pissed watching us kind of stumble our way to a World Cup semi-final. And it just, do you know what I mean? It could be
the sun will shine again
kind of attitude is what I'm trying to get.
I hope that
comes with it hand in hand with Spurs.
And that's what I was referring to earlier when I said, you know, that there's a good argument for getting football back up and running, because it would give everyone such a big lift, and it is, you know, such a big part of British culture. And I hope after all this, you know, people do support their clubs. I also, because I've been doing a lot of non-league for the paper during the crisis, I also hope people, you know, really think about going down to their local clubs, because honestly, you know, they if Spurs are struggling, then they're really, really struggling. These clubs live kind of day to day on gate receipts, and they don't really have much else in terms of income. And I hope there's a kind of, as you said, like a almost sort of post crisis football boom. I think that would be, a really good thing for the country, and one of the many good things that I think could come out of this currently bleak situation.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. All right, I think that's pretty much as we can go over in the current climate. Like I say, we're going to try and do a few more of these specials. Probably not anything to do with current Spurs unless there's anything immediately urgent or important that we feel as if needs to be raised. But we've got some ideas of what we're going to do. Probably going to go over a few sort of classic games, classic squads, players, etc. Do you remember the first season, Dan, when we did Martin Yole special, the AVB special and the Redknapp special, was it?
Yes, I do remember. I enjoyed them very much. We'll do some stuff like that, definitely. And we'll look at classic squads. Classic Spurs memories, if we can.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I think every football club at the moment is struggling to do for content. Was it Spurs did the other day of the perfect 90? And they picked 10-minute segments from 9 games.
Yeah, I saw that.
To me, that just felt way overcomplicated. Just play a game, play the Ajax game, lads. Just play some highlights.
Yeah.
But I suppose everyone's really sort of reaching for that. But we'll probably release one every so often. Try and fill some time over the next few months. Hope you enjoy it. But for now, that's it. Dan, I'll speak to you next time.
Yeah, speak to you soon.
Bye-bye.